Good morning. Some new faces, so can we begin by introducing ourselves? John, will you start?
I'm John.
I'm Joe.
Cliff.
Sam.
Gigi.
Michael.
John.
Gigi. Back there.
Right.
And
Michael. Susan.
Chris.
Gigi.
Will.
Jonathan.
Holly.
Mike.
Bree.
Mike. Welcome, everyone. A few weeks ago, in the context of another talk, I mentioned what's called the 9 stages of meditation, the 9 stages of shamatha, or the 9 stages of calm abiding, and I received a request to talk about these 9 stages of meditation. So we're going to try and do that today. It's a little bit unusual in the context of or tradition of Zen talks. Often Zen talks have a interesting story, conversation, and a subtle teaching involved in that story, and then some context of practice or daily life is talked about. If anything said at all. And what I'm going to attempt to do today is kind of shift a bit and talk about our experience, our meditation experience, both inside the Zendo and outside the Zendo, in a somewhat, you could say, systematic or almost analytic way. We're going to look at it as a process or kind of like looking at it as a map. And we have to remember that the map is not the trip, you know. The map is not the experience itself. The map is just a tool. And sometimes a map describes where we are, where we have to go, or what our environment is. But it doesn't describe necessarily what our intimate experience is. The metaphor that I like for this kind of descriptive discourse is it's like a trellis. So a trellis is a support for a living plant. Here and there, this living plant will touch on the trellis, and the trellis will be a support, will be an aid for the growth of that plant. But the trellis is not the living plant. The trellis is just a support. So in our analysis of our experience this morning, let's keep that in mind, that it's just a map, just a trellis. But it may be useful, and it's been very useful for me to understand it in this way, because I myself have a little bit of an analytical nature to my thinking, and so other people do too, to some degree. So, first of all, the classical way of describing meditation, or the view of meditation, very old from the Indian tradition, is it's like two wings of a bird, or two wheels of a cart. The two These two sides are totally interrelated and interdependent. So, yes, we're describing them as two aspects, but obviously without those two wings, the bird would not be the bird, the bird would not fly, and the cart would not be a cart. So the two aspects are shamatha, which means again, we're talking about our meditation experience. Shamatha means to settle, to pacify, to arrive, to be at rest, to place, to actually come to be at a place, mentally or physically. Shamatha, the root sama, it's the same root as samadhi, and it means sameness. So it's like a unity or connection with something. Samadhi and to some degree shamatha sometimes are described as one-pointedness or meditative absorption or calm abiding. That's shamatha. So that's one wing of the bird. The other wing of this bird of our meditation practice, our meditation experience, is called vipassana. Vipassana means, as it's translated, means precise seeing. So these two things, I'm not quite sure of these translations, but Chinese, ji and chen, I might be messing that up, but the way the two characters are, the two kanji characters are translated is shamatha means to stop and vipassana means to see. So we can kind of look at the two wings of meditation is we stop and then we see or know or are aware. Okay? Shamatha, vipassana. So this, those are the two wings of meditation. That's the kind of basic framework where our lattice, you could say, of our meditation experience. So far, so good? Is everybody on board, on the trellis? So now we're going to look at the nine stages of shamatha practice, the nine stages of arrival, of being here. This is a little unusual for a Zen talk because oftentimes in meditation practice or in the meditation experience, a teacher will say, just sit down and see what happens. Or just sit down, or the kind of meditation instruction they'll give you is very, very minimal. And there's a purpose to that. The development of this experience shouldn't be necessarily secondhand information. It shouldn't be prescriptive. You shouldn't get someone's spin or view of what the experience is. You should find your own intimate relationship with your body and your mind, which is the commodity of meditation. So the teachers will just say, just sit down and shut up, basically, and see what happens. And we do, don't we? We see what happens, hopefully, sometimes. But let's look at this process in this kind of analytical or stage-based way. We've all from our experience, we've all had a sense of coming to the meditation experience and sitting down. And we, in this tradition, we face the wall, and we become acquainted with ourselves physically in this still position, and we become acquainted with our consciousness in this sort of container of practice. And sometimes the instruction is just to follow your breath, or to notice your breath, or to be aware of your posture, right? Do you remember your initial instruction? Just sit down in a comfortable, upright posture without contracting your senses. Be aware of what's around you, but bring your attention to a place, to this place. And usually the initial instruction is follow your breath, or be aware of your breath, or be aware of the rhythm of your breath. Do any of you remember that initial instruction? Yeah. Any? So of these nine stages of shamatha, these nine stages of calm abiding, the first one, I'll go over them real briefly and then we'll go back and we'll look at these in detail. So the first one is fixing the mind, or placing the mind on the object or focus of meditation. That's the first one. Just placing it. The second one is extended fixation, or extended placement. Just you're there, you're with your object of meditation, and you're just there a little bit longer, let's say. Extended fixation, that's the second stage. The third stage is refixing, or resetting. You've lost it. You've realized that you're separate from your object or focus of meditation, and now you're coming back. The fourth stage is close fixation, or close settling, or resting near. That's the fourth stage. The fifth stage is sometimes called discipline, but it's the Japanese is chosin for this stage. It means taming, or pacifying, or settling, calming this situation. So it's discipline. That's the fifth stage. The sixth stage is pacifying, or making peaceful, settling. The seventh stage is called introspection, and that's kind of a misnomer. It's not introspection in the sense of vipassana, discursive, but has to do with balance. The eighth stage is called joyous effort, and the ninth stage is called spontaneous engagement. Okay. Class, this is clear. Who did that thing on Saturday Night Live? Not class.
Cheech and Chong.
That's Cheech and Chong?
Yeah, they never showed up in a door in a talk before.
I thought it was Gilda Radner. Okay, is everybody up for this? Let's analyze this situation. First one is called fixing the mind, or placing the mind, resting the mind. Now, this first stage is there's actually four kinds of engagement in this practice, and this kind of analysis comes has been refined by Tibetan scholars, but it's actually from Tibetan teachers who are much more analytical than the Zen teachers. It's also from the Madhyamaka tradition in India. So there's four kinds of engagement. The first kind of engagement is forceful engagement. And actually, you use chetana, you use will. You actually train the puppy. You apply intention or will to bring yourself to the object or focus of meditation. The second kind of engagement is interrupted, like it's not sustained. It has to be reapplied, and that's obviously the third stage, applies to the third stage. And the fourth is uninterrupted. It flows. It's continuous. It has no. It has no seeming effort. It's sort of taking care of itself. And the fourth one is even the same thing, but it's even broader. It's called spontaneous engagement, which is the same name of the last stage. So those are the four. Kinds of engagement, the four kinds of application for this process. So in our situation, in our tradition, we do have this what's called shikantaza, which is engagement or presence without any without form. Without any kind of specific object, or particularly without any specific kind of goal or intention. But in a sort of nuts and bolts sense of meditation, we do bring our attention to our body as a kind of located biological entity, and we bring our mind to focus on that body in this moment. And the vehicle or the medium that we use that's usually recommended traditionally from the very beginning. There were many kinds of applications for meditation that had to do with specific states of mind or psychological states. But the most universal one, and the one that's the most popular, you could say, is attention to our breath. So that's stage one. We actually sit down and we find our breath. We find ourselves located in a cushion. How did we get here? I have no idea. But you're on a cushion. You're in a meditation hall. You're aware that your body is here, and that you're awake. You're conscious, and you bring your attention to your breath. Right? Am I over describing this? This is kind of like what's happening. That's the first stage of shamatha, that we actually find ourselves and we find our attention placed on this object of meditation. So this process is kind of we're gathering our attention to focus on this one thing. And the second stage is uh, is to just extend that for a while, to just say for two breaths, or say for one breath, to just be with it for a while, to actually find yourself in a continuum of awareness of your body, awareness of your consciousness, awareness of your breath for an extended time. Everybody good with that? Everybody doing this right now? Any questions so far? This is a little unusual Dharma talk, so if you have any questions, please ask. Yeah.
Just one comment. One translation that I saw had for 9 breaths, and then for 21 breaths, and then for 108 breaths. I know Coben said never count beyond one. So.
He also said that counting your breath was like knitting in practice. Some instructions to actually stay with that, basically the second stage to stay with it is to count your breath. And
which one?
Which breath? Count them all. Count the one at hand. So everybody can relate to this next stage, which is the stage of refixation or resetting. Anyone can relate to that? So that's the stage in our concentration, our awareness, our focus, where we've actually noticed that we've actually aware of the fact that we've lost it. I can relate. I have had that experience. Has anyone not had that experience? So in the third stage, it's the activity of coming back to our object of meditation. Though it is possible that you're so lazy or dreamy that you aren't even aware that you've lost the object of meditation. But the actual activity of remembering that you, or coming back to the fact that you've lost your meditation, even though you're not necessarily applying your attention to, say, your breath, that recognition, that awareness, is a kind of insight into your state of mind. And when you have that insight into your state of mind, you're practicing. You're already back. You know? Some people think that meditation, they get into kind of a fixed state of meditation like a project, an assignment. So I will be with my breath. This is my assignment. And when they're not with that assignment, they develop a kind of almost an aggressive quality toward their state of mind. They are judgmental or disappointed in that particular state of mind. But remember that recognizing our kind of lost or drifted state of mind is awareness, is attention itself. So you can make yourself feel good about your particular state of mind because you recognize that you had a lost state of mind. Do you understand? And actually, that kind of friendliness to the meditation practice is is important. That's a kind of engine, or that's a kind of power in itself. That kind of friendliness or enthusiasm that sometimes has to be evoked. I mean, sometimes it happens spontaneously, but sometimes you actually have to invoke a kind of enthusiasm or a willingness or a readiness and even a friendliness to the process so that you don't sabotage your own experience by saying, oh, I lost my meditation again. I'm hopeless, you know. Instead saying, I'm still here, I'm still alive, I can take another breath. And I'm so happy I found my meditation again. Sometimes when we this is dependent on the person's kind of capacity, but the particular mental state, how sleepy they are, and how mentally alert they are, but. There are times in the meditation practice when it's very good to forcefully engage, to actually willfully come back. You know, like training a puppy. You love the puppy. You're really devoted to the puppy, but you want to train that puppy to do this thing, and you have to bring it back, and it strays. Or it bumps into things like Holly's puppy, and you bring it back, and you bring it back, and you bring it back, and you train the puppy. You forcefully engage that or discipline that puppy. When we have a very narrow view of our object of meditation or our focus of meditation. Like a very narrow view of what the breath is, and our assignment or our intention is in that narrow view. Sometimes the energy or the vitality or the awareness of our life cannot be contained in that narrow view of it. Like, follow your breath. Inhalation, anapanasati, it's called traditionally. You follow the inhalation, you follow the exhalation. You follow the inhalation, you follow the exhalation. You stay with that one thing. Sometimes it's very good to hold that tight view of inhalation, exhalation. Just stay with it. And in staying with it, you can develop a kind of restful abiding. You can actually come home to your body and mind. Even though it might be very, very narrow and tight, staying with that one inhalation, exhalation can actually calm and settle both your body and your mind. But there's other times when that kind of narrow inhalation, exhalation, staying with that is too constrained, it's too tight, and you cannot be, your energy or your vitality or your mental state cannot be contained in that small view of your breath. So in that case, what you have to do is not necessarily tighten more, but actually enlarge your view of your breath. So you make your breath, if your object of meditation is your breath, you make your view of your breath, you make it larger, you make it bigger. So some meditation instructors will say, attend to your breath, but I'd like you to be aware of all the sensations in your body, and I'd like you to listen to all the sounds and be attentive and supportive and nurturing to all the sounds that you hear. And I'd like you to be attentive and aware of all the flickerings of thoughts that come in. Let them come and let them go. And what the teacher is saying is he's saying, don't abandon your breath, or don't just abandon your breath as a focus of of meditation, but just expand the view of your breath. So it's breath with everything you hear. We hear the blue jays here every morning. So we breathe. It's not that we either bring our attention to our breath or the attention to hearing the blue jays. We bring our attention to our breath with the blue jays, or with the pain in your knee, or with the flickering of your thoughts, or with the kind of drifting of maybe a sleepy state or attention state, you know, those kind of unbalanced states that come in meditation, or we get a little dreamy and sleepy, or we get a little too tense, or we get a little too excited mentally. Those are unbalanced states that we try and come back to a middle place. So there are times to kind of very, very strictly stay with your inhalation and exhalation and be rigorous about it, be forceful. And there's other times to open up your whole view of what your breath is. There's even teachings or teachers that say you begin by following your breath in your body, like awareness of your breath going in and going out, and you're aware of the physical sensations, and then you're aware of your whole body breathing. And then you can be aware. This is kind of active imagination. This is kind of extending the awareness of your breath into kind of active imagination states. You're aware of your breath as the whole room that you're in, expanding and contracting, or inhaling and exhaling. In other words, you're the conscious engine of your whole breath, of the whole room breathing. You support the whole room. You support the energy and life of that whole room by your inhalation and exhalation. And then you could go farther, and you could say, in this way of imagining your breath as something big, the whole vata of jikoji, breathing, inhalation, inhaling and exhaling, and the whole world. That takes a bit of imagination to imagine your breath and the whole world inhaling and exhaling. But strictly speaking, where do you draw the line? You know? The bottom line is that when you breathe in, you take in the world, right? You breathe in this mutual medium of atmosphere that's the whole world. And when you exhale, you release yourself to the whole world. So, did you want to?
Yeah. I had a wonderful experience that brings this up, of snorkeling.
Yeah.
I've seen that preserve on the four hard coral reefs and the ebb and flow. Fathomless water in my breath. I love snorkeling more than ever because of that breath just resonates. So, and to be calm in there, in the breath, in the head, in the flow, it was as if it was together.
Like the environment and your breath were the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Well, we should move on, right? Where are we? We're on stage three. We're refixing or resettling. And now stage four is called close fixation or close settling or resting near or real immersion. In this stage, you can stay with it by, as I mentioned before, by focus or by enlargement. But you're not necessarily, in this stage, you're not necessarily trying to stop thought. But thought itself, like just drops away. It just falls off this close fixation of this resting near. In this stage, it's somewhat stable. You're with the meditation object. There may be like flickerings of thoughts. There may be flickerings of thoughts. There may be incidental excursions of thought. But basically, you're there. That those thoughts are incidental. And the sense of being pulled away, centrifugal, a sense of being sort of pulled away by all these other noticings has calmed down, and you're with it, you're settled. This is a very peaceful state in meditation. I'm sure we've all experienced this. I'm sure we'd all like to experience more of it. There's a sense in sense of feeling joy or peace, very peaceful quality in this state. But there's a kind of problem, or there's an issue in this state. And in this state, we're gathered, basically. We're gathered here on our seat. We're with our consciousness. Where it's not too tight, it's not too loose, we're settled, but the danger here or the risk here is that it's possible for us in this state to kind of over-gather or over-collect. And this is sometimes the state where people feel a sense of sleepiness or tiredness in their meditation. Not necessarily in this state, but it's common in this state to almost get into a kind of dreamy quality, a trance-like state. We're collected, we're settled, but we're over-collected. We're actually, strictly speaking, we've lost the object of meditation because we're in a kind of dream-like state. And everything's fine, and we're at peace, but we're not really with it. So we may become like, in this state, we may become like a kind of, we may become kind of moody and sensitive. We may develop a kind of mood that's not really a practice state. So the antidote for this in this state, in this settled, peaceful, calm state, is to kind of perk it up, to kind of jazz it a little bit. So if we're aware of our, if we're following our breath, we need to, or we're aware of our posture, we need to tighten our posture a little bit. And oh my goodness, I'm still on four. We've got five more states to go.
Part two.
Well, just to finish this state, if I could just go on for just a bit. In this state, we need to, if we've over-collected, if we're in this sort of dreamy state, we need to tighten up our awareness. And we can tighten it up physically, or we can tighten it up mentally, or actually they're both together. So we can make our posture a little more noble. Or if we're following our breath, we can actually bring our attention to our the physical sensation of our breath, of the in the traditional Theravada, Vipassana, they're aware of the subtle temperature change as the air comes into your nose. Or in Zen, it's often emphasized that you bring your attention down to your hara, with this mudra, and your breath settles down into your abdomen. So being aware physically of the expansion and contraction of your abdomen as your breath settles down. Being aware of it as a physical sense. In other words, you kind of brighten your whole situation. You kind of perk it up. That's a way of kind of, this is an antidote for that over-collecting quality of the fourth state. And there's five more. So please keep that in mind, and maybe we'll come back to this. Hopefully we'll come back to this and we can talk about the other states of shamatha. Okay?